We've all done it. You Google a symptom and suddenly you're planning your funeral. Most of the time it's nothing and a real doctor sets you on the right path. But what if the internet actually knew you, your medical history, your habits? If your answers were based on your data, not generic web pages, could they be trusted to give you accurate medical advice? Well, that is the idea behind ChatGPT Health, a new service that they say will help inform and make you feel more confident navigating your health. To say this is controversial, it's a bit of an understatement. You're about to hear from a public health specialist, a consumer health advocate, and someone whose research focuses specifically on e-health. With me is David Hanson, CEO of the Australian e-health Research Centre at CSIRO. David, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Talk to me about ChatGPT Health. What is it?
Sure. ChatGPT Health is a specific version of the ChatGPT tool that we've all used and had the last two or three years using. It's designed, it differs from the normal ChatGPT in two key ways. One, it's designed specifically for answering health questions. And when I say answering health questions, they're promoting the tool as a personal health assistant for you to help you navigate the health system, to help you understand what the health system's telling you, and to know what to ask the doctor. The other key difference between normal ChatGPT is that you can upload your health data. So it's actually using your health information. Now, in the ChatGPT for Health in Australia at the moment doesn't have that feature, but in the US and other countries, it is accessing directly your health information, so it can use the information that's in your health record to tailor the response to your questions.
So you said your health record in like colloquially, but in
yes.
Australia we do have a tool called My Health Record, which is where our stuff is held. How is this different to that records interface?
Sure. So My Health Record is our national health record. Under the new share by default, we're all going to have a lot more information going into there. And I'd really encourage people to actually make sure they set it up and use it and look at it, because it's a great way of empowering you with your health information. And that's really where a lot of these tools are going. In the US in particular, it's a little bit different. There is no national health record. But commercially, the Apple Health kit on your phone can talk in America directly to your electronic health record in the hospital. So that's a little bit different to how we're structured in Australia at the moment, but that does mean that you've got a little bit more control over who you share your data with directly from your phone, whereas in Australia we have to log on to the My Health app and download that data in order to upload it to other people. Importantly, in Australia, we can give our carers access to My Health Records so that they can use the information to support our care.
My Health Record has been around in Australia for quite a few years now, and there was a lot of controversy, especially when it first launched, about privacy and about the security of that data. And that's also one of the concerns when it comes to these AI-style tools.
Sure.
It sounds like you're pretty pro My Health Record as a tool for
sure.
People. Where's the divide in terms of maybe potential concerns when we're looking at an AI tool?
Yeah, so at the moment, ChatGPT for Health makes a number of statements in that it has been designed specifically to ensure privacy and security of your health information. Now, it is a commercial company, so we take that on trust in the same way that the government does a lot of work to protect our My Health Record data in the national system. And they also state that the conversations that you have with ChatGPT for Health, that information isn't used to then further train the ChatGPT foundational model. So there is a few key differences there which are aimed to protect your personal health information.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. The voice you've been hearing is that of Dr. David Hanson. He's the CEO of the Australian eHealth Research Centre at CSIRO. We're talking about the fact that ChatGPT is launching a health tool. The idea is that it's trained in a slightly different way. It's a bit more secure. It uses your information, and it's meant to be able to give you more tailored health information, given that you're Googling it anyway. I'm interested to know if you've used an AI tool for your health, whether it helped or hindered you. James in Sydney says, I use Chat for Health all the time. It's an adjunct to help me know what to ask the doctor. However, it often looks at the symptoms and finds the weirdest diagnosis ever. And my sister is a GP. James says, buyer beware. Andrew in Victoria points out that Google has evolved into an AI tool. No need for ChatGPT. It's still Dr. Google. Also with me is Dr. Michael Bonning. He's the chair of the Australian Medical Association's Public Health Committee. Michael, we've obviously been turning to the internet for health advice for a while now, like 25 years. How is using an AI search engine any different to something like Dr. Google?
I think James has got it right there. It's an adjunct. It's this tool that we can use, like we've used many tools for decades now. If you think about an AI search engine, and again, there was the comment that all of the major technology companies have an AI engine of their own. Google has, I think, Gemini. There's ones inside, there's Copilot inside Microsoft. There's all kinds of tools that exist out there. Everyone's going to be coming for this. This is just the first cab off the rank. When we think about search engines versus Dr. Google, we think about them, I think, in these kinds of ways. It's kind of retrieval versus synthesis. In Google, you primarily get a ranked list of sources. Now, that was always very useful because generally better sources came to the top. You then do the synthesis. You look at things, you try and interpret them, you try and apply them to your own situation. AI search typically synthesizes an answer across multiple sources, and it can reduce the cognitive load on you and allow you to kind of compare some viewpoints between what the medical establishment might say versus maybe what patient forums say. So it gives a different set of kind of answers. Now, while synthesis is convenient, it's a shortcut, and it may not be a synthesis, as was, you know, said by one of the callers, that is consistent with what you have, can give you the weirdest answer. You know, large language models are tools that develop likely answers. They are not imbued with sentient consciousness, even though sometimes they can feel like that. So it's really important that we think of them still just as they're a text-based and a language-based tool. There's a bit of handling of ambiguity and context as well. You know, Google doesn't understand your clinical context, nor necessarily does AI search, but what it can do if you upload information to it, as is being described, especially in the US and overseas contexts, then it has more ability to tailor some explanations. Now, with this, we probably want to think of it more as someone to give you a bit of coaching before you go and see a doctor. You want to talk to it and say, what are the things I should be asking about? How should I be helping to get the best out of the consultation, the appointment that I have with my doctor? And so using it a bit as a sounding board to create more meaning for you and better health literacy so that when you go in to see your doctor, you're getting the most out of the environment that you're in.
Michael, as a doctor, are you looking at this tool being like, oh, yay, this is going to help me do a better job by my patients? Or are you worried that perhaps it's going to dissuade patients from bothering to book an appointment or maybe undermine what you're trying to do in the clinic?
No, I'm very positive about people accessing tools to help with their health literacy with caution. The cautions are always that this shouldn't replace seeing a doctor. It shouldn't replace engaging and having a fulsome discussion, because it's not just the information, it is the execution of that. How do we put in place management? How do we think about treatment? How do we tailor that not just to your clinical profile, you know, I've got this problem, you know, with my left leg, to also, well, I live in a house with stairs and I have this and I have that and I have a dog to walk, and, you know, we help build that around that context. The second thing that I think is really important in this is the ability of large language models like ChatGPT to be overwhelmingly convincing. They are styled upon their ability to provide engaging conversation or responses based on information, and they are very good from the information they learn from you at being able to convince you. They have infinite repositories of ways to shape their language much more so than any doctor sitting in front of you. And so they can seem and be overwhelmingly convincing. And that's something that I think people need to remain open-minded about. When they take the information from ChatGPT to their doctor, or have had a conversation with ChatGPT and then go to their doctor, the important thing is that you remain open-minded, because the doctor is also very capable of engaging with and thinking about the same set of information and coming to decisions with you and synthesizing information that is valuable to you, rather than just trying to convince you that the viewpoint of the LLM is right or wrong.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm with Dr. Michael Bonning from the Australian Medical Association's Public Health Committee, Dr. David Hansen from CSIRO. We're talking about ChatGPT Health. I should say we reached out to OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT Health. A spokesperson said ChatGPT Health is for education and information, not medical diagnosis or treatment. ChatGPT Health is never intended to replace doctors or professional medical care. The statement went on to say, our models are trained to focus on explaining information, outlining common possibilities, and helping users understand when something may be worth discussing with a healthcare professional, rather than stating that someone has a specific condition. The model is trained to point people to healthcare professionals for diagnosis and treatment. And let's talk a bit more about this end user, us, as health havers, as health consumers. Elizabeth Devaney is CEO of the Consumers Health Forum of Australia. Elizabeth, welcome back to Life Matters.
Thanks, Tegan.
There's so many things that play into someone's ability to see a flesh and blood doctor: cost, availability, distance. Do you think a service like this helps to fill a gap?
Absolutely. We know that people struggle nowadays to get healthcare, many people, because, as you said, cost, location, all kinds of other things too. If the healthcare system has perhaps hurt them or shamed them or is out of reach, then something like ChatGPT Health could seem to be an obvious solution to their problem.
What about perhaps, if tools like this are so available, is there a worry that perhaps we don't invest more in getting doctors to, say, rural or remote areas, or having them be affordable for people on a range of incomes?
Yeah, for sure. I'd also add that, of course, even now, not everyone has access to Wi-Fi. Not everyone can use an app. So whether you think this is good or bad, we do need to keep in mind that this kind of health service will not be usable for many Australians. Yet we know that, the Edelman Trust did a survey, global survey about trust, and included AI, and 55% of the people they surveyed think that tech will actually have a negative impact on healthcare. And that's not dissimilar to a survey we did about a year or so ago when we asked Australians. And most people, so a bit over 50%, said they had a poor to fair knowledge of AI. And the majority of them said, we really only want it used for healthcare administration, like helping me book appointments and so on. And they were not supportive of it doing things like helping them to choose the medicine or make a diagnosis.
David, how does that track with your research in terms of digital literacy as being a really important part of this?
Yeah, both digital literacy and now AI literacy. And most of the AI work which we've been doing has been with clinicians who are actually big users or increasingly big users of some tools in AI. AI scribes, for instance, when you go and see your GP, many of them are now using AI scribes to summarise your consult and we'll give you a copy of that. The world of medicine is just getting bigger and bigger, and so clinicians using all that and wanting to access all that information is going to be a really important use case for AI, and that will necessarily include your using your data to get the best results out of the AI.
Have you used AI for your health already? How did it go for you? Did it help or did it maybe backfire? Robert says, I used AI with my health conditions. I found it useful. Came to the same conclusion as my specialist about bloods. Helpful in explaining reports. Another says, after an ultrasound, I Googled inflamed pancreas, was told everything the specialist later told me, except for choosing which test was most appropriate. So specialist is good. Specialist is good for choosing which test to do to determine diagnosis. Another says, Kimmy in Tasmania says, I've been using an app that's recording my blood pressure. It identified that I had unstable stage 2 hypertension, and I was able to discuss this with my GP, which resulted in an increase in medications. The AI facility summarised the recording and I could send the data to my GP. I found it very useful. Michael, how does tools like this help patients collaborate with their doctor? Is it something that you welcome?
See, that's a fantastic example of where this works really well. Even if you come and see me for half an hour every week, there is 167 and a half hours of the week where you're not seeing your doctor. Now, that's a very unfair comparison. Most people will go weeks or months without seeing their doctors. So there is a huge component of their life that is invisible to their practitioner and is very difficult to summarise and then synthesise into a consult in 15 or minutes or half an hour. The value of having things like apps connected to technology like AI is that it can summarise what used to be, as Elizabeth was saying, I've got lovely patients who record every single one of their blood pressure readings in a little diary and they bring it in to discuss it with me. It's wonderful. It's the same thing. This is just having a technology overlay into it and is making it easier for someone to engage with, yes, I've got all my blood pressure data. I've got access to a doctor. We can talk about what's next in terms of medications, exercise, diet, because all of those things still need to fit together. Having higher blood pressure does not necessarily mean more medications. It can mean less salt. It can mean change in exercise patterns. It can mean we're going to work more and more on weight loss in a consult. There are lots of different ways to address that issue. And I think that's the same with most things, is that connecting our life outside the consulting room, i.e. our life in general, with what our doctor can help us with is actually phenomenally valuable.
So what I'm hearing is AI not equal good or bad, but it's nuanced and there's work to do here. David, what kind of guardrails would you like to see to make sure that these inevitable tools are useful and safe?
So look, the government is looking at guardrails around these AI tools. Patients are going to be using them anyway. So, we do have to then look at how do we actually provide the information to patients and clinicians on how to use these tools. What's the AI literacy we need to tackle, as well as the data literacy and health literacy, so that when one of your callers said something about getting some really bizarre diagnoses or potential diagnoses, and it's where you have to have the common sense to go, that's a little bit odd, I'll ignore that one. And so it's that health literacy along with AI literacy that we need to be providing to our both patients and clinicians. And then how do we actually provide some benchmarking around these tools so that we know they're safe, that they've been suitable for the Australian environment, that they use our data properly and they know what sort of data we capture in the Australian healthcare system. So they're the sorts of things that we need to be looking at.
So, Elizabeth, for consumers, what would you like people to be doing to have ownership over their health records and their health?
Well, to start with, to keep in mind what was said earlier about plausibility, remember that these bots can sound really plausible, they're not always accurate, and just being a little bit wrong in healthcare can be a big problem for you. Some surveys have shown that many people make decisions that they later regret when they use AI. So there was a recent global one that showed about 41% of people regretting a decision they made guided by AI. This went up to 55% for people under 34. And I feel like I need to give a shout out to Michael to say, I do not know as much as you, Michael. Mm-hmm. However, one in three people who use AI think they do know as much as their doctor. And so, like you said, Tegan, people have different views, but if you think you know as much as your doctor, but we're also hearing that over half of people are saying I made a bad decision using AI, there's definitely got to be a note of caution here. So buyer beware. Remember, these companies are making squillions from your data, and it can feel free and easy, but remember, this is a commercial transaction for the person who's running that system, and your health data and your life is something you need to guard very carefully.
As someone says on the text line, let's not be naive. ChatGPT Health is not about empowering customers. When will we ever learn this is about data harvesting and profits? Always good to bring a bit of a raised eyebrow to conversations like this. Well, David, Michael, Elizabeth, thank you all so much for joining me. David Hanson is CEO of the Australian eHealth Research Centre at CSIRO. Dr. Michael Bonning, the chair of the Australian Medical Association's Public Health Committee, and Elizabeth Devaney, CEO of the Consumer Health Forum of Australia. And now feels like a good enough time as any to mention another ABC podcast, What's That Rash, where Dr. Norman Swan and I, who are real people and not AI, one of us is even a doctor, we answer the health questions everyone's asking. You can find it on the ABC Listen app, What's That Rash.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.